and it was only on rare occasions that one of the older men of the place detained him for a word. When this happened, he would listen quietly, his blue eyes on the speaker's face, and answer in so low a tone that his words never reached me. Then he would climb stiffly into his buggy, gather up the reins in his left hand, and drive slowly away in the direction of his farm. "It was a pretty bad smash-up?" I asked Harmon, looking after Frome's retreating figure, and thinking how gallantly his lean brown head with its shock of light hair must have sat on his strong shoulders before they were bent out of shape.
"Worst kind," my informant assented. "More than enough to kill most men. But the Fromes are tough. Ethan'll likely touch 100.
"Good God," I exclaimed. At the moment, Ethan Frome, after climbing to his seat, had leaned over to assure himself of the security of a wooden box, also with a druggist's label on it, which he had placed in the back of the buggy, and I saw his face as it probably looked when he thought himself alone. "That man touch 100? He looks as if he was dead and in hell now." Harmon drew a slab of tobacco from his pocket, cut off a wedge and pressed it into the leather pouch of his cheek.
"Guess he's been in Starkfield too many winters. Most of the smart ones get away."
"Why didn't he?"
"Somebody had to stay and care for the folks. There weren't ever..."